Welcome back, everybody. This is Mark Steiner right here on The Mark Steiner Show on your home for the 2016 mayoral debate, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Before we begin this first segment of our program, talking about the No Boundaries Coalition report, which was an amazing study about police abuse in our communities, what to do, and how it, and what's been happening, and I'm glad to have all these folks on with us. I want to remind everybody that a new law goes into effect today in Maryland that all returning citizens, ex-felons, have the right to register to vote as of today. So 40,000 people in our communities go out and register to vote. You can turn the system upside down with your vote. So realize now that all people on probation and parole now have the right to vote in this community. So beginning today through April the 5th, you can exercise your right to vote. I want you to get that announcement out, and we'll do more about that in the coming weeks. We're beginning here with the No Boundaries Coalition report, which this is an amazing report put out by this coalition of community organizations on the west side of our town that has to do with what is happening with the police and their relationship with the community, and really pulls no punches and comes up with some very serious recommendations. We're here with Talia Marrow, who is a sister of Jeffrey Marrow, who was killed in a police-involved shooting in 2006. She's a member of the No Boundaries Coalition. Good to have you with us. Did I say your name
good
right?
Good morning.
Is
yes.
it Talia, right?
Yes.
Right. Easy Jackson's back in the studio with us, organizer for the Campaign for Justice, Safety, and Jobs. Good to have you. Good to see you, Easy.
Good to be here. Thanks, Mark.
Rebecca Nagel joins us by phone, director of the Boundaries Coalition. Rebecca, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talkatsteinershow.org for an email. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. But let me ask you about the genesis of this report, where this began, and who this coalition members are.
So the need for the report became clear for us actually out of a day of door knocking. So on April 25th, 2 days before the unrest, but after the death of Freddie Gray, 15 volunteers from No Boundaries Coalition went door knocking, and we were simply asking Stantown residents what they wanted to see come out of the crisis and what felt urgent from them to them. And on that day, we talked to 250 residents of Stantown, and we heard so many stories of police violence and police misconduct, from people having their houses torn apart to find out that the police just had the wrong address, to people who had lost their loved ones to police violence. And while the level of violence and corruption was well known in the community, we knew that a broad group of people, both the general public and policymakers, needed to be made aware, and it was with that intention that we formed the commission and set out on our fact-finding mission.
And Talia, welcome to the studio for the first time. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And so you joined this coalition because of what happened with your family and brother? I mean, how did you get involved in this?
First and foremost, yes. what happened to Jeffrey back in 2006, but not only that, but the ongoing misconduct in the community with the police present to this day throughout my whole life that I experienced, friends and family members have experienced. Just last year, I was stopped and pulled over and harassed by plainclothes officers, whereas though I had to call down to Central District and nothing got done, they just let me go and they never sent me a ticket. It was an incident where my son's father was helping an elderly neighbor. They was towing a car wrongfully because it was on private property, and it escalated, and they was mad because he knew the law, because he's a tow truck driver. He's been doing it for 6 years, and he was in the yard, and they wanted him to go in the house and get his ID. They came into let themselves in the yard, pulled out the tasers. My six-year-old son was there. He asked, them to be mindful that he was there because they was using such foul language, and they actually said, F my six-year-old son. The officer name is Dale Mattingly, and from what I understand, he have been involved in several high-profile cases. Understand he beat up a 12-year-old, and the city had to settle a lawsuit with the family and several other things. So it's just an ongoing situation that I feel like if we in the community don't get involved, it's not going to change, and not just black people, but people of all race that just hate to see injustice done, that love equality of all things that God has made, like I stated before at another conference. We got to break this barrier because we need the police in our community, but we need them to do it the right way.
And your brother, I know, you still don't know all the circumstances surrounding your brother's death. It was how many years ago? 9 years ago?
So it's about 9 years, coming up on 10 years.
Right.
It happened in 2006.
Right.
He was accused of armed robbery. He was never found to have any weapon on him, any contraband, any money, just a single daily bus pass. We was never told of the officers or officer involved. We was never told of the findings of the investigation for them to rule it a justified homicide. I mean, he was almost 7 foot, and he was shot in the center of the back of the head. I don't understand how you get a shot like that if you're chasing someone. I just don't understand. Maybe they was intimidated. Maybe they caught up with him. He was also shot in the back of the arm several times. So I'm thinking maybe he was running and he fell. And once they caught up to him, they shot him in the head. It could have been a tussle. And from him being a big guy, they was intimidated. But I just don't understand what could have justified such inhumane force being used in the execution of a civilian that was no threat to officers or other civilians at the time of the pursuit.
So one of the things that Easy, I was thinking about, and talking to Talia earlier when she first came into the studio early this morning, and knowing about her brother's case and hearing what she had to say, and then reading the report, let me just read a couple things from the report just to put things out there. So these are two pieces that they came out of the report saying where people were afraid, most people were afraid to give their names mm-hmm. or to speak publicly, but told their stories mm-hmm. anonymously because they were afraid of any kind of retribution is what they said in short. And that 46% of people talked about abusive, demeaning, and subordinating language made by officers, 57% I mean to say. And let me just read two stories, and then I want to come to you here. Mm-hmm. The one story was the officer picked me up and slammed me on my face, took my backpack off, threw all my books out, and when they didn't find anything, kicked me in the stomach. I was just happy they didn't lock me up and bounced. Another person writes, Mr. MP was on his way home from school and stopped at the corner of Fulton and North Avenues to chat with some friends. As they were talking, two unmarked cars pulled up, and 8 officers ordered all the students to get on the ground. A police officer subjected the witness to a vulgar and invasive search, which included the officer putting his hands in the witness's underwear and handling his genitals. The officer also slapped him, and then they let them all go when they found nothing on any of the kids mm-hmm. that were stopped. So mm-hmm. what you know, this is the thing we've been talking about a lot on the air. And some people always mistake this as kind of hating the police or thinking that they're all evil people, which is not the issue.
Right.
But one of the things we always focus on, like with what happened to Talia's brother, with the death of Freddie Gray and the trials coming up with the 6 police officers, is death by police fire is just a tip of the iceberg. This we're talking about what these people just said,
mm-hmm.
the kind of daily kind of physical, verbal abuse that people take mm-hmm. that I think is at the heart of this matter. Maybe I'm misreading, but that's...
No, it is. It's the culture. The culture needs to change. You know, the police feel very comfortable talking to civilians and citizens like that, treating them that way because they know they can get away with it. So, you know, there's several ways, you know, of course, shows like yours and getting the word out there, reports like this that No Boundaries has put out.
It's a pretty amazing report.
Yeah, it is. It's
really,
awesome.
Really well done.
And then also changing the policy, you know, changing legislation. We're working in Annapolis right now on bills that change the Officers' Bill of Rights and it holds them more accountable. The police need to be held accountable, not just by themselves either, because right now they're policing themselves. And so there's a shield. There's the blue shield there that makes it where they can do whatever they want to whenever they want to, which we don't have that right as civilians, clearly. So... that's why we're working the Campaign for Justice, Safety, and Jobs. It's a coalition that includes No Boundaries, as well as other organizations, I think over 30 organizations from the city, working to change the policies that exist that continue to, you know, that police officers can continually get away with these things. So right now we have a bill before the House Bill 1060 and Senate Bill 790. One to change the Officer Bill of Rights. So one main piece in there right now, amendment we're working to get, is a civilian on the trial board. We think that having a civilian there who also has voting power is important, that, you know, the police are held accountable by somebody from the community when they're accused of brutality or any kind of misconduct.
Folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. Rachel is here at talkatsteinershow.org. Send us an email. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. But we want to hear your thoughts, your ideas, and what this New Boundaries Coalition is doing. And I think that, Rebecca, on the way back to Talia, I mean, one of the things about this New Boundaries Coalition, I mean, it may have emanated from Sandtown, but this is a coalition of groups throughout the west side of Baltimore, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we work in 8 neighborhoods in what we call Central West Baltimore, zip code 21217. And so for
my
this
old zip
report,
code.
we talked to about 1,500 residents through an intensive street outreach. So we canvassed, we door knocked, we held community meetings to make people aware. And then we actually spoke with 435 people who had stories of police misconduct. And of that large number, 39 people would sit down to do an in-depth interview. And so that just shows the level of fear that people have of police retaliation. And even knowing that our community group would keep their names safe and anonymous, not wanting to go on the record because of fear of police retaliation.
And Talia, you said something earlier in the green room as we were talking about this. It was, I think, pretty profoundly important because the way you approach this report in terms of what you want to see happen is because – you said we need police. We need better relations with police. We don't, but we can't continue to exist like this. Talk a little bit about what you were saying.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as a resident of Baltimore City, I know of the crime just as well as anybody else. Just because I'm a black female and what they call the hood don't mean I turn a blind eye, because crime has no name. You know, it has no age. I have cousins. I have brothers, you know, in the city, and my grandmother as well. And we need the police, you know, but it's hard to contact the police when you're constantly fighting with the police. It's like, where do you go? You know, how can you effectively police your own community? But why should you have to think of ways to police your own community when we have people sworn to do this? You know, so I think it comes down to new reforms and different tactics and training. I think they need to put more effort into the mental health screening of police officers, because these men and women have to deal with a lot of stuff every day, and just like any other human being, they get stressed, you know. And I don't think bringing an officer in to see a psychiatrist after they already pulled their firearm is helpful. We need to get them in to talk about their stress and their stressful situations more often before it gets to that. And I want to say I met with Major Briscoe.
Oh, yeah.
Of the Western District. I mean, I believe she's a new person over there. It was really refreshing to talk to her as a human being and not as a police officer and a civilian. And she just seemed like she genuinely wanted to make a change and break this barrier that became so strong and fixed in West Baltimore between the civilians and the police officers.
So, you know, Easy, picking up on what Talia just said, this is something. It's even more than just people. Well, I think civilian review boards and having police on trial, civilians on trial boards, is critically important to beginning to maintain this as a political question and as a human question. Mm. And questions we're going to ask the mayoral candidates tonight at our forum just about that. But the other part is what this report really focuses on, which is the distance between the police and the community,
right.
The kind of abuse that takes place we talked about earlier. Mm. That's a harder nut to crack in terms of how you begin to change that culture. I mean, do you know what I'm saying? That's so critical, though.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's crucial. And I think it starts with officers like Major Briscoe, who Talia brought up. I met her, too, the other day. And she's officers being genuinely concerned about the health of the neighborhood. Not, you know, definitely their job first and foremost is to pursue criminals, you know, and uphold the law. But also to... You know, she's very concerned about that culture, about the relationship between the community members and her staff. So she was there talking to people. You know, she understood what the press conference was about. She wasn't there accusing us of being anti-police or anything. She was genuinely there concerned. And I think it starts with having more officers like her, you know, on the force. I think one of the things that some of the candidates are starting to talk about is, you know, giving police officers incentives to actually live in the city, which right now is not the culture. You know, the culture is that they live in Harford County. They live in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And they come down here to police these wild Baltimoreans. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. then they go back out to the suburbs. That culture has to change. Yes. You know, I mean, you have a different reaction from the community when they know, I know Major Briscoe. You know, you can look at an officer and say, I will call Major Briscoe. You know what I mean? And that officer knows that they don't want Major Briscoe to get called. And that's basically what she expressed to us the other day. Like, that's the kind of shift I'm going to be running. You know, and I think when you see stuff like that, there's hope.
Yes, absolutely.
So one of the things I'm curious where you all as a coalition want to take this report and what your next steps are. I remember when Commissioner Bielefeld was still in office, one of the things that he and I talked about, it was off the record, but we can talk about now he's no longer a commissioner, was an idea I had that I was pursuing with the police department, which was that maybe the police need to open their doors to the community and actually leave the guns outside and sit down with people in a quiet place, no press, no nobody else, and have real dialogues between the police who patrol the streets and the people in the community, begin to have these communication with one another as human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's got to be trust.
Something's got to be built that's different than what we're doing now, because it can't continue. You're trying to say something, Rebecca?
Yeah.
And then I'll turn over to Talir.
Yeah. As an Avengers Coalition, we've been doing that work. We actually started doing that work over a year ago, holding roundtable discussions between patrol officers. So the way the districts are, there are different sectors and different patrols. So we were trying to connect officers that patrol even just a section of a neighborhood with the residents who live in those blocks. And both parties, both the police and the residents who sat down for those roundtable discussions, were really grateful for them. And in the report, we have a bunch of recommendations for the Baltimore City Police Department. So continuing to have those roundtable discussions between patrol officers and residents, to have foot posts where officers are actually on the beat, out of their cars. And then we've seen this not only be successful in building relationships with community, but actually deterring crime, because in high crime area, when there's a visual presence, and we're also, the officers know the people and know the community that they're policing, it's been much more effective. And then one of the other big recommendations is that we need to build those relationships not only between officers and residents, but also between community stakeholders, leaders, and command. You know, communities and community leaders know what they need from the police department and know what changes need to happen. And so we need to have clear mechanisms for community leaders to be able to give that feedback back to the department at a higher level. So one of the best practices that we recommend in the report is actually modeled after Seattle's Community Police Commission, which brought together a diverse group of stakeholders to say, you know, this is the type of policing that we want to see. These are the policies that we want to have in place. And we know that we need radical reform within the police department. And if we're setting out to do that as a city, we need to make sure that we're bringing the right people to the table.
And Talia, what were you about to add to that?
Everything she said is, you know, about right. You know, she's really good at what she does. She chalks it straight up. You know, sadly, I stand here today. I may not never know what happened to my brother, but I want to push for these bills because we definitely need this change for the safety of ourselves and our communities and for our officers. We all need to be safe. We all need to make it back home, and we just definitely got to make a change, and we got to keep on bringing attention to this very touchy subject until something is done, because it's not something that's going to go away.
Some of the recommendations you all have here, folks, do join us at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts on this and what the No Boundaries Coalition is trying to do, and we'll be having them back on for more dialogues here about this in the coming weeks. But you talk about providing anti-racism training, the de-escalation and community relations training, redefining policies that govern how and where officers are assigned, and fully funding the Police Civilian Review Board. I mean, there's a lot of things here that are kind of there's a lot here for the police to wrestle with,
mm-hmm.
and our community and our political leaders.
Oh yeah.
So how do you push it? politically? Where do you take it?
I mean, of course it's a fight. Right now we're in Annapolis, you know, trying to get the bill passed through the House and the Senate, and it's a struggle. You know, it's
the reform of the police officers' Bill of Rights. That bill? Oh, you mean the which bill are you talking about?
The police accountability, police reform
right.
one,
right?
With the,
right.
And there's a couple. There are a few that we're trying to get through, and you know, it's a struggle. You got to go through the process. Of course, the bills have to get voted on, so you have to talk to, you know, all of these elected officials from across the state who represent different areas. Where it might not be, they may think it's not their problem. So the challenge is getting them to see that it's all our problem. You know what I mean? You know, yesterday was Freddie Gray. Today is Aaron Winston. Tomorrow it could be your nephew, your son. It could be you, you know. So I think trying to get that across, as well as just, you know, tackling the challenges of policy and, you know, where everything stands. And, you know, it's a challenge.
Were you about to say something, Rebecca? I didn't mean to. I thought I heard you trying to chime in.
One thing that's happening in Baltimore right now that's also really important is that the Department of Justice is probably going to release their findings this spring, and then the Department of Justice in Baltimore City will enter into a consent decree process in which Baltimore City could be given federal mandates to make a lot of serious reforms. And so we released this report kind of with this time. We've worked really closely with the Department of Justice. We've introduced their investigative team to a lot of residents. We've helped them collect story and collect testimony, and all of the in-depth interviews and the transcripts that we collected through this commission we're sharing directly with the DOJ. But it's also important that people apply public pressure to that process so that we can get the most possible out of that consent decree and see some serious reform. You know, the Civilian Review Board in Baltimore has a new director that's doing a lot of really important work. But, you know, that's just as one example. If they don't have adequate staff to do their own investigations,
right.
It's not going to be effective. You know, internal affairs, which in the police department, just internal affairs has a budget of something like $6 million. And the parallel organization that's supposed to be where civilians can have investigations, their operating budget last year was like $150,000. And those are approximates. It's not exact, but it, you know,
right.
gives you an idea of where we need to put more power in civilian oversight.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge issue here, so the Police Civilian Review Boards. We did a town meeting last year, early in the year, with the folks from Toronto, which took place at Real News, who have a very powerful and strong Civilian Review Board, and to raise that issue. I mean, I think that's probably one of the most critical factors. I'm curious. I'd be very interested to see what police say about this report. I don't mean the majors.
Okay.
I mean
the men
and women on the street, what they say if they read this report, what their reactions
is.
It
would be very familiar to them. You know,
what'd you say, Talia?
It would be very familiar to them. You know, this is what they do. It's sadly, it's become the norm in the communities to be talked down upon, and we walk away with it because you're just so happy that you're not going to jail. I actually had a brother at the age of 17 a couple years ago be beaten up by the police and took him down to Central, and he was underage. They wasn't even supposed to take him, and they came and actually harassed my mom to question him about something he did not have no parts of. And they told my mom when he turned 18, we're coming back to get him. And they did just that. And my mother had to put out a lot of money. And we actually did our own investigation and found, you know, that he wasn't involved in, you know, it was other people involved that actually did what they was trying to frame him of, but it was that they did not like him and they knew him from the community just as Freddie Gray. You know, the officers that he dealt with, they knew exactly who he was. So you do have some officers in the community that the civilians do know very well. And unfortunately, sometimes it don't make a difference, because if somebody's just a bad and evil person, that's just what they are.
Let me try to get a call in here before we end the segment, and we're going to have more with No Boundaries Coalition coming up in the next month, and talk and bring the police in as well and see if we can help push this particular issue, because I think they're reaching a very critical mass here with this report, which I was really very taken with reading it. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Bill, quick thought from you. What is that? Go ahead.
Yes, thank you there, Mark. Hello to DeGette. I just want to know the position that DeGette take in terms of that For years, we have been saying that it needs to be a citizens group to witness the incineration process of weapons and drugs that the police confiscate off the street, because there's no oversight in terms of what happened to them drugs and weapons. And I would like to hear what your panel's position is on that issue.
Yeah, Bill brings this issue up a lot about the oversight on what happens to drugs and weapons that are taken by police.
Mm. Yeah. One story was somebody whose car was confiscated, and a neighbor saw the police planting the drugs in the car. And then as the family went through the court process, they couldn't get the car back. So even though all the charges were dropped, you know, it's like, and this was, we heard this over and over again, where people were charged with things and then it was thrown out of court because the evidence was fraudulent or there was no evidence. And even though that happened, the family couldn't get the car back. And so, and that just shows that the toll and the cost of this misconduct and this violence, you know, we hear about cases like Freddie Gray, and then there's the day-to-day loss that people are dealing with, like property, and there's very little accountability for that.
Well, we do want to get more of this going on. We're going to put this report on our website. This conversation we can continue. So, can you give a website that people can go to look at this report themselves and how they can get a copy?
Yeah, so it's available online at our website, NoBoundariesCoalition.com. And you can go directly to the report at NoBoundariesCoalition.com/commission report.
And we'll also put that on our website when we upload this show this afternoon for everybody to hear in podcast. So it'll be there as well. Rebecca Nagel, good to talk to you once again. Good to have you with us. Director of the Boundaries Coalition. And E.C. Jackson, always great to see you. Organizer for a campaign for justice, safety, and jobs.
Good to have you. Thanks for having me, Mark. Always good seeing you.
And Talia Morrow, great to meet you.
Thank you
for coming to the studio. Talia is sister of Jeffrey Morrow, who was killed in a police-involved shooting in 2006. She's an active member of the No Boundaries Coalition. Good to meet you. Thank you for coming to the studio.
Thank you, Mr. Mark.
And we're going to take a short break. And when we come back from this break, we are going to talk about the decision by the appeals court that says that Officer Porter has to testify in these other trials of the men accused on the death of Freddie Gray. What is that going to mean? We're going to find out.